This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. A special edition as we have our second installment of the pod this week. And I'm looking forward to today's conversation with David Hale of ESPN. He did an extensive breakdown of the quarterbacks heading into 2025. He ranked all 136 quarterback rooms, put them in different tiers. And I highly recommend, if you haven't done so by now, check out that article. We're going to dive into it. Not going to hit on every quarterback, but was curious his thoughts on a handful of quarterbacks, maybe a little bit off the radar. We don't dive into, you know, Arch Manning, but a lot of unique situations, in my opinion. And as we've talked about here on the podcast, and maybe it helps lead you to continue that preparation and getting to the window this upcoming offseason. We'll wrap up the podcast, and I'll get a little nerdy as the game times for week 0, 1, 2, and 3 were all announced on Thursday. I am giddy. I'm counting down the days. I'm already envisioning the late night sweats on Labor Day weekend with the 4 late night get back games there in week number 1. But a quick open, because I just wanted to hit this and then we'll get to David Hale. But you hear us say this all the time, and it probably gets a little tiring. Always be shopping. But it is true. Yesterday on the podcast, Brad Powers pointed out that there was a big difference in the futures market regarding Notre Dame. And whether you think Notre Dame is going to win the national title or not, here are the facts. Notre Dame is going to be a favorite in all 12 games this year. Do they have uncertainty at the quarterback position? Absolutely. Did they lose some big-time pieces in the secondary, like Xavier Watts, who won the Nagurski Award 2 years ago? 100%. They are not a perfect team by any stretch of the imagination. However, what was brought up by Brad Powers, and I think is worth noting here, Notre Dame is 17-1 to win the title at Circa. They're 12-1 to win the title at DraftKings. They're 14-1 to win the title at FanDuel and BetMGM. They are 30-1 to win the national championship at the Westgate Superbook. So if you think a team that, as Brad pointed out, he believes is the deepest team they've had in 3 decades, going back to the Holtz era, and you think they can make the playoff like they did last year, well, 30-1 could certainly hold a decent amount of value. Also worth noting, Notre Dame now can get a bye, right? This thing has been changed around where if Notre Dame runs the table, which is a big if, but if they were to run the table, they would have a bye onto the quarterfinals, and then you'd be sitting there with a 30-1 ticket. So it's just worth noting and looking around and seeing the differences. So I just quickly looked around with the top 11 teams in the odds market, seeing the big differences out there. And to be honest, there weren't massive differences at a number of shops, but I'm just going to point them out here. And I know I got a couple tweets a little while ago. It's boring when I read odds out there, so I'll make this quick. Ohio State, shortest you can find, 5-1, DraftKings and MGM. If you like Ohio State, 6-1, Westgate and FanDuel. You like Texas? 650 at FanDuel. What about Oregon? 850 at DraftKings. Georgia, 8-1 at Circa and Westgate. Penn State, 8-1 at Circa and FanDuel. How about Alabama? Do they bounce back? Westgate has them at 16-1. Circa has them at 15-1. MGM has them at 15-1 as well. Clemson, a team that we've talked about a lot. Ari Wasserman mentioned that at 20-1, which is what the number was a couple weeks ago at DraftKings, was a slam spot. Now 16-1 at Westgate, DraftKings, FanDuel, and MGM. LSU, Garrett Nussmeier. We're going to talk about him in just a moment. You like LSU? 23-1 at Circa, 18-1 at FanDuel. Michigan, Bryce Underwood, he's your guy. Okay, 34-1 at FanDuel. And then lastly, pretty big discrepancy here, Ole Miss, 40-1 at the Westgate Superbook. So just wanted to point those out. I have the whole chart up over at my Twitter at one Tim Murray. I won't go too long into it, but I did make the Notre Dame bet at 30-1, considering they're 17-1 at Circa, 12-1 at DraftKings. I thought 30-1 to me, and you can make fun of me when they lose week 1 to Miami, but hey, they lost to Northern Illinois in week 2 a year ago, went to the playoff, went to the national championship game. And if you were sitting there with a 30-1 ticket in the national championship game, you were in pretty good shape even though they lost that game to Ohio State. But remember, Notre Dame scored the opening touchdown, and I remember Matt Newman sitting next to me and had a, I believe, 10-1 ticket on the Irish to win the title, and he got off on Ohio State, I think around minus 190 or so on the money line. All right, just wanted to point that out. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it'll be David Hale of ESPN. Just a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Let's keep it rolling. Those numbers have continued to go up, so let's keep it rocking here as we are, 86 days away from week zero of the college football season. Quick break, then David Hale of ESPN.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised from ESPN, and I've referenced his article quite a bit here on this podcast, as well as on my Saturday show, the VSiN Weekend Morning Line, David Hale joins us right now, and you could follow him on social media at @DavidHaleJoint, one of my favorite Twitter names out there. What's the premise behind it? A big Spike Lee fan?
The whole story, if I told you the whole story, I might get fired for this.
Okay.
I don't know. A while back, ESPN said that I was perhaps a little too, I don't know, what's the right word? I'd used my Twitter for multiple entertainment reasons that were not exactly work-related that they found was probably not the best reflection on ESPN. So rather than adjust my Twitter content, I adjusted my Twitter name from David Hale ESPN to a David Hale joint, just to spite my employers, I guess. I don't know. I'm a terrible person.
Well, you're not a terrible journalist because I've very much enjoyed your article. You know, I think, and I had Ari Wasserman on a couple weeks ago, and he wrote a column over at On3, David, that said this could be the year of the quarterback. I've done the exercise of ranking my quarterbacks. You did it and then beyond, 136 quarterback rooms. So ultimately, how did you come about the quarterback room discussion? Because I think this is kind of fascinating. When you look at a place like Auburn, for example, their quarterback room is very intriguing because you've got Jackson Dart, you've got Ashton Daniels from Stanford, and then you've got a five-star recruit in Deuce Knight. So why ultimately did you decide to go the quarterback room route as opposed to just ranking the projected starters?
The easy answer is it's sort of like, well, A, I think if you go back and look annually, there's probably something like 60 to 70% of schools will start multiple quarterbacks over the course of a season. Like, that's just attrition is a thing that happens. But, you know, the easy answer is I sort of wanted to balance it, like, I don't know, 80-20 towards the expected starter. But then, of course, you look at a lot of schools where there's not, at this time of year, an expected starter yet. I mean, even schools where we sort of have an expected starter like Ohio State, it's far from guaranteed at this point, even if we're all kind of leaning in one direction. So add all of that up and it's make more sense to look at the room, but even doing that is not as simple. So I look at something like Georgia Tech is actually a really good under the radar room where, they've got, I think, an exceptional starter in Haynes King, but Aaron Filo came in reserve of King last year and played really, really well and looks like a guy with a ton of high upside. But there is an established 1-2 set there. It all sort of works within each other. Like, that's a really good quarterback room. Auburn is a great example of, like, there's three guys with talent. How it all works together, I don't know. And if any of the three are ready to be an actual star, I don't know that either. So, you know, it's not necessarily as easy as saying, like, well, hey, they've got a bunch of good guys in one room. It's sort of like, do you have a starter? Do you have a backup you feel comfortable with? And if the answer to both of those is yes, and the ceiling for both is fairly high, then I'll have you rank pretty highly. If it's sort of a jumbled mess, you know, it's a little bit of reading into the crystal ball and hoping you come up with a decent answer, but that's certainly far from guaranteed.
So you put five quarterback rooms in the, quote, tier one top of the class. And I want to get to Garrett Nussmeier because I've joked that this podcast has kind of become the Clemson podcast over the past couple of weeks because there's so much excitement regarding that program. But Garrett Nussmeier's got a lot of buzz coming into the year. And one stat that you unearthed was comparing his numbers last year to Jaden Daniels. So what did you find out regarding Garrett Nussmeier, and how bullish are you on Nussmeier to have a big year in Baton Rouge?
Yeah, so I didn't love this comparison, but I did find it to be interesting. So I should preface this by saying I did not compare him to Jaden Daniels' Heisman season. I compared him to Jaden Daniels' year before the Heisman season, and those numbers look awfully similar. So is it possible for Garrett Nussmeier to take a leap and become the type of quarterback that Jaden Daniels did the year after? Certainly it's possible. As you note, there's tons of buzz around Nussmeier right now. I sort of looked at Nussmeier's season and I said it was a mixed bag. And that's sort of where the comparison started for me, is I thought, well, I also thought it was a mixed bag for Jaden Daniels way back in 2022. And I was wondering, you know, is he a legitimate star, or is he just a pretty good quarterback? That's sort of where I feel about Garrett Nussmeier right now. Now, those two players are very different stylistically. But they're playing in a similar offense. They're going to throw the ball downfield. Nussmeier is probably a touch more accurate naturally than Jaden Daniels was, but he's also certainly not quite the athlete that Jaden Daniels is. So you add it all up, I think there's certainly a ton of upside to Nussmeier, but I'm not sure if you go back and look at the actual numbers from last year that you'd say, oh, that's clearly a tier one quarterback. I think he's a very good quarterback with the potential to take the leap in his second year as a starter. But, you know, the other thing you have to remember about Jaden Daniels, that was his second year as a starter at LSU. It was not his second year as a starter. Right. He'd spent years starting at Arizona State too. So, but they're in a similar point in their career age-wise. Again, similar offense. I think there's a lot of comparison points that you can take from that. I just want to be very cautious in not saying I think he's about to become 2023 Jaden Daniels, because I'm not sure how many guys are capable of doing that.
Well, to me, David, I thought the more fascinating blind resume that you put out there was Garrett Nussmeier and Carson Beck, because the perception, as you pointed out in your column, and I would agree with it, is that Garrett Nussmeier, okay, yeah, he's going to make the next step. He could be the number one pick. And, you know, just a year ago, this time right now, Carson Beck was your Heisman favorite. He was the favorite to be the number one overall pick. And in the eyes of many, he had a disappointing year. But as you broke down and looked at the stats and you did the blind resume, was it really that big of a disappointment when you look at the numbers?
No, I mean, look, to me, the disappointment was the rest of Georgia's offense, which was not nearly as good as it had been the year before. They had one of their worst rushing seasons in the last like 30 years at Georgia. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Trevor Etienne was hurt for a good portion of the season, but it just was not an offense that relied heavily on, or could rely heavily on, the running game. The receivers were a disaster for a large part. There was nobody that was the consistent threat to get open in the slot the way Ladd McConkey was. There was no obvious mismatch the way Brock Bowers had been the year before. And I pointed this out, like, go back and watch the 23 SEC championship game against Alabama. Like, the offense looked a lot in that game like it did most of last year, which is what an offense looks like when you don't have Bowers and McConkey playing at their best. So, you know, go back. I went through and adjusted Beck's numbers if you account for the significant increase in drops by his receivers and the significant decrease in the number of contested catches his receivers came down with, and adjust those back to the 2022 numbers, and all of a sudden his stat line looks the same or better in a lot of areas as it did in 2022. The one area where it doesn't is interceptions, and I think a lot of that came down to the same thing, which was him pressing to try and find open receivers or squeeze balls into tighter windows, or throw passes that he probably wouldn't have thrown in 2022, because he knew, I've got to do a little something extra because we don't have somebody here to bail us out. I've got to be the guy that bails us out. Now, I think, you know, some of that obviously does come back on Beck. I mean, you'd be foolish to say he had as good a year last year as he did in 2022, but I think the idea that he was this massive disappointment, or that you saw the real Carson Beck last year, is really foolish. And again, you know, we talked about the Nussmeier to Jaden Daniels comparisons. Like, put him in the offense that Cam Ward just went from a non-factor in the draft to the number one overall pick, and put him, instead of throwing against SEC defenses, against ACC defenses. I'd be pretty surprised, assuming he's healthy, if Carson Beck doesn't put up some really big numbers in Miami this year.
Yeah, and as you look at it right now, Notre Dame a 2.5 point favorite in week one on that Sunday night game. I'll be in attendance, and as a Notre Dame fan, I'm a little nervous because I think Carson Beck, to what you pointed out, and as I talked about the past couple of weeks, maybe getting overlooked a little bit. And you know, coaches are kind of like politicians, David. But Mario Cristobal, if we take him at his word, he told CBS he's full go. He's ready to go coming off that Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, I talked to Mario a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, Carson's already been throwing for several weeks, in a sort of a limited basis. But when they're actually, I think probably this week starting, with their summer program, and he expects Beck to be somewhere in the 95% range, certainly back to 100% by the start of fall camp, assuming no setbacks. Like again, all of those things are assumptions. There's still a lot of unknown, and frankly, there's unknown. To an extent, with Miami's receiving core, they've got some young guys that they're very high on. But you know, their top receivers from last year that helped make Cam Ward what he was are not back this year. So you're looking at a much different receiving core. But I do think Miami's going to have, if not the best, certainly one of the best O lines in the country. They've got a pretty good backfield. You know, Mario Cristobal, for all of the criticism about some of the on-field decision making on game days, he has massively upgraded the talent in Coral Gables. So I don't view that as a team that needs Carson Beck to be Cam Ward. I don't view it as a team that needs Carson Beck to be the same Carson Beck he needed to be for Georgia last year. I think he needs to be an above average, very good quarterback, but does not, the earth and sun and moon do not need to all revolve around Carson Beck at Miami. And I think that is that should be a huge benefit for him.
You know, David, I think if you remove Arch Manning from this discussion, which is most polarizing quarterback coming into 2025, because everything starts and ends with Arch and what he's going to be at Texas, and we can get to that. But I think, in my opinion, one of the more intriguing players this whole year, at least early on in this offseason, is going to be Jon Mateer, because you know, what he did at Washington State was phenomenal. He comes with his offensive coordinator and Ben Arbuckle. But you don't have him in your welcome to the big leagues tier, which is the players who went up from either G5 to Power Four, or in, you know, for instance, the South Dakota State transfer moving from the FCS to the Power Four. What have you unearthed regarding Jon Mateer, and why ultimately are you as high as you are on Mateer in that transition from Wazoo to Oklahoma?
Part of it is just because I'm a sicko and stayed up and watched a lot of Washington State games last year.
He was awesome, man. There's
He
no
was
doubt.
awesome.
He was awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, there was not a lot of quarterbacks. I mean, he to me was the closest quarterback in college football last year to what Cam Ward was, in that he was a really smart, good game managing type of player when he needed to be, but was one of the best improvisational quarterbacks in the country. He made the team around him better. And again, he's not go he's going to a tougher conference, clearly. That there's no argument that the competition will level up significantly in the SEC. But he's going with his offensive coordinator. He'll be playing in the same scheme. I think this is such do or die for Brent Venables in Oklahoma right now, too, that they're giving him every possible reason to succeed there. I think that, look, is it entirely possible that he moves up and is a failure at this level? I guess, but I didn't see anything to suggest that. And then if you look at the overall performance that he had last year, I mean, those numbers stack up against some of the genuinely elite performances in a season. It's just nobody noticed because it was at Washington State. If he had put up those same numbers last year at Oklahoma, you know, he might have been in the Heisman discussion, probably would have been a finalist at the Heisman, but because it was at Washington State, a lot of people didn't notice. I'm a believer, and that's a little bit of, hey, follow your gut, follow the stats, believe in Ben Arbuckle, who again also helped prep Cam Ward for who he became. All of this just checks out to me as I'm not going to say Cam Ward 2.0, but there's, you know, it's not exactly a ludicrous comparison point.
Look, we're not going to go through all the quarterbacks. I wish we could, but that would take too long, and that would just give away your whole column. So make sure to check out the column. I just want to kind of bounce around a little bit because I thought some of the numbers that you unearthed were really fascinating. And I said this yesterday, David, on the podcast regarding the Big 12, where, you know, it might not be eye-popping from a quarterback standpoint. There is no, you know, Arch Manning. There's no Cade Klubnik, but there's some really good quarterbacks in that conference, and I think that some of them are getting overlooked. So I want to go to the comparison that you made between Drew Aller of Penn State, who is thought to be, maybe in some people's eyes, the best returning quarterback in the country, to Josh Hoover from TCU. Because Josh Hoover, and maybe he'll become a household name week one when they play UNC on that Monday night of Labor Day on ESPN, but he has been very much under the radar for TCU. What did you find diving into the numbers when you compared Josh Hoover to one of, if not the best, returning quarterback in the country?
Yeah, I mean they're very similar. And look, this isn't flash in the pan, Josh Hoover. You can go back to 2023 and see, you know, the latter half of the season he was putting up these same type of numbers. And you know, we're talking about a Sonny Dykes offense that has created a lot of really good college quarterbacks, including Max Duggan a few years ago, who ended up a Heisman finalist and playing for a national championship. So, look, Hoover has got just boatloads of talent. And again, the numbers on paper are for real and over a long period of time. Similar again to Drew Aller. I think, again, you'd probably want him to cut back on the turnovers a little bit, but that's sort of the difference between the situation that he's in and the situation that Drew Aller's in. I mean, Aller has played around better talent at Penn State and, you know, played in closer games where you've got to protect the football is probably job number one. With Hoover, there has been more turnovers, but he's also had to play in a style of offense and a team and a system that's going to ask him to do a little bit more, that's going to ask him to take a few more risks. So, you know, I tend to say one thing negates the other a little bit. Am I saying Josh Hoover is definitively Drew Aller? No, I think if you were having a draft tomorrow of college football quarterbacks, you probably would not pick Hoover ahead of Aller. But I think that the performance would suggest they're much closer than the average fan probably thinks. And TCU, again, as you point out, has a chance to really establish itself in week one in a game that it absolutely, in my opinion, could win. Now, we can all remember a couple of years ago when TCU played an opener against a team they were supposed to beat with a very high profile new head coach, and it didn't work out that way. So we shall see. But yeah, I mean, this is a great opportunity for TCU, a great opportunity for Josh Hoover to both put their names on the map for 2025 from the outset.
Think about that. I didn't put that together. I should have, but you have Coach Prime opens up his career at home against TCU, and Bill Belichick is going to open up at home against TCU. Kind of funny to see some of the parallels there. I want to stick in the Big 12 and just look at the quarterbacks and which ones maybe you're the most bullish on and which one maybe you have your skepticisms on. I mean, you look at it right now, David, Avery Johnson at Kansas State, massive, massive hype going into last year, maybe underachieved a little bit. Does he get a bounce back? Sam Levitt exploded onto the scene, winning the Big 12, going to double overtime against Texas. Devin Dampier, I've said on this podcast, I'm super bullish on him. I think he's going to be fantastic at Utah. He goes kind of like Mateer with his offensive coordinator, Texas Tech. You've got some interesting numbers on Morton, their quarterback. They've got a lot of talent. Jake Retzlaff back at BYU. Sawyer Robertson, another guy wildly underrated, in my opinion. Rocco Becht, Jalen Daniels, Caden Salter comes from Liberty. I mean, you go down the list. It's really a talented quarterback conference this year, David.
It is deep, and there's not the superstar probably name recognition wise that there is in the SEC or the ACC right now, but yeah, it is a deep conference of quarterbacks. And you know, the two guys that I probably want to point out the most here, you mentioned Sawyer Robertson. You know, Lenora Sellers at South Carolina got a ton of buzz as the year went along because South Carolina got red hot down the stretch, was in the fight for a playoff berth. You know, Shane Beamer's out there after they beat Clemson saying this dude deserves to be at the Heisman. All of that was accurate. Like, Sellers was that good in the latter half of the season, except Sawyer Robertson was every bit as good, and Baylor played every bit as well and put up the same record as South Carolina did while he was putting up the same, if not better, numbers. Like, he was insanely good the second half of the season at Baylor. It's just, Baylor was so bad the first month and a half or so of the season that nobody really noticed. Whereas South Carolina, while they weren't good the first month and a half of the season, played well enough to still be in the mix at the end. So, yeah, Robertson to me has as high a ceiling as anybody, certainly in the Big 12 and maybe anybody in the country. But then the other guy who might be the most underrated quarterback, the most underrated maybe player in the country, is Rocco Becht at Iowa State. I mean, all that guy has done after being basically Iowa State's fourth choice at quarterback a couple of years ago, was has win, and he has won and won and won, and he doesn't do it by putting up the sexiest numbers. He was not this super high profile recruit, while his dad Anthony Becht is a wonderful person who I know and like very much. That's about his claim to fame and as far as name recognition, and it fits perfectly that he's at Iowa State, a place that everybody overlooks every year, and yet Matt Campbell and the Cyclones keep going out and winning enough football games to be relevant on a national stage. To me, Beck is just, I mean, I'm often skeptical of this term, but he's a winner. I mean, that's just what he is. So he gets the job done. He's done it in a ton of close games over and over again. So to me, I'm not sure there's a more underrated player in the country right now.
You have a tier called Young Pups, and I think when you look at the futures board right now, Ohio State's the betting favorite. They have an uncertainty at quarterback. Texas is number two. Arch Manning, we expect to be very good, but still you could put in the uncertain. Georgia, uncertain. Oregon, uncertain. Alabama, Notre Dame, Michigan. I mean, you go down the list and there's a lot of question marks at the quarterback position. So the four young pups that you pointed out, Bryce Underwood, the superstar recruit going to Michigan, CJ Carr, redshirt freshman at Notre Dame, Julian Sain at Ohio State, and then someone that I'm pretty bullish on is Damon Williams, because we got to see him a little bit last year at Washington and he was really impressive. So of the young pups, David, who's intriguing to you the most as they step into a really high profile gig, at least in three of those four? You can consider Damon Williams high profile because they played for the national championship 2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, well, look, it'd be foolish not to say Julian Sain. Not, I mean, A, yes, he was a high profile recruit with a ton of talent. But just look at what Ohio State's done. And I'm not saying just, last year with a guy that everybody thought was a mediocre quarterback won a national championship. And Howard put up great numbers last year. But I mean, go back year after year after year, coach after coach, system after system, Ohio State creates great college quarterbacks. I mean, it's just, you have to go back. The only, I think, since in the playoff era, the only quarterback that they had that finished with a below 70 total QBR was Cardale Jones in 2015. And that's the year after he won a national championship at Ohio State. So I just, the history would suggest if the sun comes up every day, go ahead and expect it to come up tomorrow. That's about how I feel about Ohio State having a great quarterback. But you mentioned Damon Williams, who I think has an incredibly high upside at Washington, a team that sort of came on as the year went along last year. And I expect to be much better in year two under Jed Fish. But the bigger takeaway for me is we've been living in this transfer portal era and also the era of sixth and seventh year quarterbacks because of the COVID redshirt year, where there's just been a depth of veteran talent available in the portal for teams hoping to contend. Well, you just mentioned this huge long list of not just blue bloods, but the bluest of blue bloods going with basically in-house talent. I mean, I know Sain is technically a transfer, but really, I mean, he came up at Ohio State. And even some of the other schools that are going to compete, or you would think are going to compete at a national level, Florida, Clemson, Penn State, these are guys who have in-house developed quarterbacks. Like, it feels like a changing of the guard, sort of back to more traditional quarterback development at the college level than something we thought we had lost probably forever, really going into last year, where the last 4 or 5 years had been all about transfer quarterbacks. This year feels like a year where almost everybody that will be projected. Another team that you didn't mention there is Ole Miss with Austin Simmons. Like, the number of top probably 20 programs, I bet you're probably going to go down and look and find 15 to 16 of the top 20 programs will have what amounts to an in-house quarterback that they've developed from scratch. And a lot of those guys, Georgia, Alabama, are going to start guys who have been, Texas, are going to start guys who have been in the system for 2 or 3 years and are now ready to take over. I mean, that just didn't happen for the last few years. So it to me is that's maybe the most fascinating storyline of the season right now.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up. Let's get to Ty Simpson, who is, as Kalen DeBoer told us, the leader after the spring, but it is thought to be a three-horse race with Ty Simpson, who's been in that program for 3 years, Austin Mack, and then, we talk about Bryce Underwood being the superstar recruit headed to Michigan. Keelan Russell, according to most recruiting rankings out there, number one quarterback recruit. You look at some of his numbers from Texas, the state of Texas, where he played high school, just out of this world. Is it going to be Ty Simpson, in your opinion, there at Florida State? And does Russell have a chance to take this gig from Simpson?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a great question because it's been a while since we've gone into a season at Alabama with such huge questions. And when it has happened, we've sort of seen differing answers. Simpson's a really fascinating guy because when you look at him, I mean, he was a prized recruit coming out of high school. In fact, he was the guy that Dabo Swinney and Clemson wanted. And they ended up taking Cade Klubnik instead after Simpson committed to Alabama. It's really funny how that class worked out because I think Cade Klubnik wanted to go to either A&M or Texas, and Malik Murphy and Connor Wegman kind of jumped the gun on that because Klubnik was slow to decide. Clemson wanted Simpson and ended up with Klubnik, and Alabama gets Simpson. Well, Klubnik is a superstar now. Malik Murphy and Connor Wegman have both been in the portal, Murphy multiple times, and Ty Simpson is just now getting a chance to possibly earn his first start. Now, I think there's a scenario in which this looks a lot like 2020 at Alabama, where Mac Jones was sort of an afterthought after being there for a while, but assumed the job over Bryce Young and obviously deserved it when a national championship was a Heisman finalist. The other situation is it could look like 2016 when you open the season with, I can't even remember who the heck it was, Blake Barnes, somebody,
Blake
I can't
Barnett,
remember.
Barnett.
Blake Barnett, yes, there you go. You open with like a couple of veteran guy, unproven guys at Alabama thinking like these were big recruits. It's their time now. They'll start. And by halftime of the opener, it was Jalen Hurts' job and he never looked back. Well, no, he did look back actually a couple years later, but that's a different story. I think I would be a little surprised if it's not Simpson to start the season. To me, the better question is who is ending the season as Alabama's quarterback? Because yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think look, Simpson is talented, but he had opportunities to win that job even 2 years ago and hadn't done it. I'm a little dubious still.
You think back to that disastrous USF game where I still think it was Nick Saban just looking at Tommy Reese and be like, "Go ahead, start your guy, start
Yeah.
Tyler Buckner."
Well,
And
and in retrospect, it actually proved to be brilliant because all the criticism that was being put on Jalen Milroe's shoulders was like, oh, okay, well, there is not a plan B. So I guess we'll stick behind this guy.
who is now a walk-on wide receiver at Notre Dame right now, Tyler Buckner.
Yeah, I know. Unbelievable.
A couple other things before we let you run, because I love this article and I really enjoyed it. I want to get to CJ Bailey of NC State because the numbers that you pulled here were pretty interesting. Once again, you have DJ Lagway, and I think rightfully so, with a little Zoolander tear, so hot right now, which is true. I think DJ Lagway, I think I put him number two in my quarterbacks coming into this year. But CJ Bailey of NC State, his true freshman season kind of went under the radar. So, what were the numbers you pulled there of NC State's quarterback versus DJ Lagway, who's expected to be one of the best quarterbacks in the country?
Yeah, now look, I will preface this by saying I'm well aware that their schedules were very distinctly different. NC State
Yes.
played a much different schedule than Florida did. But set that aside, and man, it's a lot of overlap in the Venn diagrams there. Two true freshmen thrown into the fire after the expected starter got hurt. Two true freshmen that I think clearly at times looked overmatched, but showed some real flair. And two true freshmen who, when you go back and look at the numbers, the numbers are insanely similar. Except one of them was on a team that finished 7-6 but finished hot, and the other was on a team that finished 6-7 and kind of finished cold. So that's, to me, the only difference is the sort of the way that we interpreted their seasons. But Bailey was tremendous last year, and he's got a ton of upside. NC State loves this kid. And personality-wise, he fits Dave Doran and that NC State program like a glove. Just chip on his shoulder, very emotion-driven, like beloved inside the locker room. Really, really, really good dude from all reports. And he played last year. I think a safe approach to football games, and I think that was by design, is that they said, look, we're not gonna we're, if we've got a chance to make a bowl game with this guy, we're gonna ride that. But he, I mean, the numbers support. He had in the red zone last year, 17 touchdowns, zero turnovers for a true freshman who was not expected to start. That's really, really good production. Now, I think this year you take some of the constraints off and you give him a little bit more to work with. I think they have really revamped not just the offense, but the whole sort of chemistry and team at NC State this year, where they went heavy on the portal last year. It did not work out. There were some guys who I think were just not great locker room presence there. I think they have a team that they're much more enthusiastic about this time around. The ground game should be better. And then you bring in Kurt Roper as the new offensive coordinator, of course, promoted, but I think it's a different sort of approach offensively, but still consistency because it was the quarterback coach that CJ Bailey worked with last year. All of that to me, and then just look at the history of NC State. Like, what do you do? What does NC State do when nobody's talking about them? They go out and win 9 games. So I'm a buyer on CJ Bailey. I think the ceiling's really high for him. Am I saying he's DJ Lagway? No, I am not. I think there is this a distinction there, obviously. But I do think that if you're high on Lagway and you're not talking at all about CJ Bailey, you're missing the boat.
Yeah, he will miss Kevin Concepcion, who transferred to Texas A&M, no doubt. But yeah, he had some eye-popping numbers. David, transfer ups have been a big thing in recent years. When you think about, Dylan Gabriel transferred up from UCF to Oklahoma. I'm not going to say he transferred up from Oklahoma to Oregon. Cam Ward obviously transferred up from Washington State to Miami. You could say Riley Leonard up from Duke to Notre Dame. So you mentioned five. I'm going to throw in one more. So if we remove John Mateer, we've got Caden Salter going to Colorado from Liberty. We've got Mark Grun, is it Gronsky? From South Dakota State to Iowa. We've got Gio Lopez going to UNC from South Alabama. Joey Aguilar, very bizarre situation, obviously, as he was at UCLA. Nico goes there, then he goes to Tennessee from App State. Devin Dampier, who I mentioned, from New Mexico to Utah, and then Darian Mensah from Tulane to Duke. When you look at those six guys, as I wrap with you here, which one do you think is primed to kind of have that big, I don't want to say Cam Ward bump because he became the number one overall pick, but who has a big bump and you're like, whoa, this guy was meant to be playing in the Power Four?
I will say there's a great Simpsons episode where they go to New York and Homer has to call about a parking ticket, and they say, "You will be connected to Officer Steve Grabowski," and that is just how I'm going to pronounce the Iowa quarterback's last name for the entire season. I don't care if that's actually what he
Mountain
is or
Dew
not.
or crab juice? Ugh, I love the crab
Oh,
juice.
so good. But my yeah, well, and I said about Ohio State, you see the sun come every day. Iowa with quarterbacks, you see the sun crash and burn every day. You're going to go ahead and assume there'll be an apocalypse again this year. So I hope that it all works out well there. I think Iowa is at least trying to turn a corner offensively, but I don't know. The guy that really intrigues me is Darian Mensah at Duke. And the reason for it is one, he had a terrific year at Tulane last year. But two, this was, and I know Manny Diaz pretty well, and I've talked to him a good bit about this decision making. This was a very calculated and quick decision that Duke made to go out to say goodbye to Malik Murphy, who had a decent season last year, but was clearly not the guy that they wanted, and to go after a guy that they thought was a perfect fit for what they wanted to do. Paid him a bunch of money to do it, landed him at Duke, which again, I think is sort of a signal of the changing of the guard in college football, in that, you don't, Duke would have never landed a guy pre-rev share era of that caliber. And I think that sort of shows where the sport is moving. And then they have some questions at receiver this year, clearly, but they're going to be real good in the backfield. Their offensive line is set, which it was a mess last year. They're in a much better position on the offensive front this year. And look, Manny Diaz, I think, has proven that he can win football games. And Duke, as a program, has proven over the last 3 years, like they deserve to be talked about, not maybe in the upper tier of college football, but they're not the laughing stock that they had been for such a long time. I mean, this is a program that won 10 games, then beat Clemson and took Notre Dame to the wire the next year, and then won 9 games last year, Manny Diaz's first year after they had lost a bunch of guys to the portal. Like, this is a program that can win. And so, to me, I think it's a really good fit. I think Mensa was underrated at Tulane last year. Can I be wrong? Yeah, I'm like the truth about a place like Duke is that there's still not a ton of margin for error if things go wrong. But I think there's a lot to like about Mensa there.
Yeah, that week one game is going to be fun. Duke, Illinois. And then week two, how about this? As the game times came out today, Duke at Tulane, a primetime game down there. Fun little reunion. Fun how the schedule plays out.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of like the NCAA tournament vibe where it's like
Yeah.
they say they don't do these things, and I'm sure that they don't, but yeah, clearly they do.
Yeah. So nice little primetime spot there in week two, kind of under the radar. Hey, David, this was awesome, man. The column is tremendous. It's just chock full of really good insight for folks getting ready for the college football season. Parting word here, just a minute. Is Blake Horvath the best G5 quarterback?
Yeah, I had him ranked there, but this is what an idiot I am. I had him ranked in my last tier 20 the year before. So, hey, look, I have been wrong. Do not put all your eggs in my basket. But yeah, he's exceptional for what Navy wants to do. He was a ton of fun, and watching Army and Navy have two quarterbacks that really knew how to play last year was fun. I hope we'll get a little more of that this year.
David, appreciate it.
All right, man. Good talk to you.
Thanks to David Hale. Really appreciated his insight. And we had some technical issues. Hopefully the sound quality came out okay on your end there. But I wanted to wrap the podcast looking at this. And it's May 29th, so humor me. I'm a nerd, and I love when bowl games get announced. By the way, bowl games will get announced next week. Just point that out. And I like when times for kickoffs get announced. So I'm going to run through it a little bit here, some of the more interesting ones to me. But let's point this out. First and foremost, ladies and gentlemen, week zero. Let your loved ones know, August 23rd, it's 86 days away. It starts at noon Eastern. Iowa State, Kansas State in Dublin, Farmageddon in Ireland, noon Eastern, ESPN. Then you actually have a break. But at nighttime, fire up the three screens because we've got Fresno State at Kansas, 6:30 Eastern on Fox. Sam Houston at Western Kentucky. We've actually seen a little bit of line movement in this one. That game, 7 o'clock Eastern, CBS Sports Network. And then let's clap it up, ladies and gentlemen, because there's always a game in Hawaii. 7:30 Eastern. Big CBS, the Bows, the Cardinal. Can't wait to see this one. Week one a year ago, Hawaii got that primetime spot against UCLA. This year, Hawaii, who will win this game against Stanford. I certainly believe that to be the case, and hopefully we can get a three at some point. But those are your four FBS versus FBS games in week zero. We had had a number of games announced already with kickoff times for week number one. As we know, we've got Tennessee and Syracuse in Atlanta, noon ABC, 3:30 ABC on Saturday of Labor Day weekend. We also have Florida State hosting Alabama, 7:30 primetime LSU at Clemson. We've got the Sunday night game, Notre Dame, Miami. We've got the Monday night game, UNC hosting TCU. Couple things about week one. Just want to point this out to you. It has been officially announced Texas, Ohio State, as expected, big noon kickoff, noon Eastern there, week number one. But if you're listening to this podcast, you love the late night get back game. And we talk about it all the time when we come around. More often than not, me or humans, maybe both of us, have bets in that late night window. So what is the late night window? Week one. Well, I'm glad you asked. Labor Day weekend. Sit back, enjoy all the football all day. And then at 9:30 Eastern, you've got Georgia Southern at Fresno State on FS1. 10:30 Eastern, Cal at Oregon State. The Beavs, a 1.5-point favorite right now. Hawaii at Arizona, as they should be, late night. How about this? TNT. Yeah, they're getting into the game. Remember, they had those playoff games a year ago. Now TNT losing the NBA. They're going to join us in the college football world. They had some Mountain West games a year ago, too. But Hawaii at Arizona, TNT, 10:30 Eastern. And then how about a little network television? Utah, UCLA, the Devin Dampier era at Utah begins late night at the Rose Bowl, 11 p.m. Eastern there on Fox, week number one. So get ready, baby. Late night games, got the times, week one, all ready to go. And a couple other notable ones here before we wrap it up. Week two, Michigan at Oklahoma. That'll be your ABC primetime game, 7:30 Eastern. Week three, Florida at LSU. Nothing much better than LSU under the lights. And DJ Lagway heads to Death Valley, week three, 7:30 on ABC. And how about this? I was fully anticipating Oregon and Penn State to be big noon kickoff. It is not. Now, I believe it was Scott Docterman who wrote a column over at The Athletic. I haven't read it yet, and I'm going to dive into it later today. But September 27th, Oregon, Penn State. Remember last year how all the Penn State fans were bitching that they didn't get a whiteout opportunity against Ohio State? Well, here you go, boys and girls. Oregon Ducks come to town September 27th, Happy Valley, primetime NBC, 7:30. I'm sure there was some trade that went down to allow NBC, who I believe has the third pick when it comes to Big Ten games. They got Oregon, Penn State. So not sure what the trade was, but mark your calendars. That should be a good one. Oregon at Penn State, primetime on NBC. And then Black Friday, Texas A&M and Texas. That'll be the primetime game as well. Also worth noting, and I think my buddy Matt Fortuna mentioned it, the Red River rivalry, it's not at noon Eastern this year. I believe it was 3:30 last year, and it's 3:30 again. So early October, Red River, it will be 3:30 Eastern, not in that typical, for so many years, noon Eastern spot. All right. I'm not going to go through the whole schedule. Just wanted to throw out a couple there to get you jacked up, get you excited. Prep yourselves. 86 days from today. It is Thursday, May 29th, week zero, four games. Hawaii getting the broadcast television treatment. Love it for the Bows there against Stanford and the late night games in week number one. You can check them out wherever. ESPN. I'm sure FBS Schedules, one of my favorite Twitter followers because I'm a nerd, at FBS Schedules. Check that out there. But all right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Enough of me blabbering about schedules. Just a reminder, as mentioned, please do rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Thanks to Ryan Hunter. I put him to work here. He's got like a billion jobs at VSiN, and I always appreciate him putting these podcasts up as quickly as he does. I'll keep mentioning it. Next week, I'm going to try to get some of those suggestions on. But if you do have a gambling guest or just a college football voice that you'd like to hear from, I'll do my best to get them on the pod. You can give us a 5-star review. You could put that in there. You could tweet me at one Tim Murray. Thanks to our guest today, David Hale. Really good stuff from him. Make sure to check out his column on the quarterback tiers over at ESPN.com. All right, that's going to do it. We'll talk to you next week right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.